I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Catholic Church's new working papers on gays, the divorced, cohabitators, as the Church calls those living together outside of marriage, looking at the Church's new, more respectful, more accepting tone in working documents this week and asking where that goes. You can join the conversation. Do you see a new church outlook in the material coming out so far this week? Do you think it will stick? Do you welcome it or not? And is this for real? Real change? Could it just be talk? Divorced Catholics, cohabitators, gay Catholics, what do you see? What do you need from the church? And Catholic traditionalists, are you open to this more open line or not? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. We're going to sit down with three American Catholics in just a moment here for their sense of what's coming out of Rome this week. Joshua McElwee is with us. He's Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. The Church is clearly grappling with a situation in which some are just simply drifting away in an era of new norms. Here's Gregory Reddington. This is an American parishioner at Santa Susanna in Rome, saying that the Church does not address the realities of life many families deal with. This is in an interview with the Catholic News Service.
One of the problems that we've had with the Catholic Church is that it hasn't adopted to modern times. You know, it's very traditionalist, and we respect that. And that's, you know, part of those things are things that we like, the traditions and things. But unfortunately, some of them, they fall into conflict with the issues that current families have.
And here also with Catholic News Service in Rome, Gabriella Ruggiero, an American parishioner there, says the Church needs to think about the next generation of believers.
The message is the same. It's just the way that you send your message out. You know, you have to keep up with the times if you want to keep getting the younger generations to be part of the Church.
And how big a change in tone this week? Pretty big. Many are saying landmark. Here's Vatican spokesman Reverend Thomas Rosica, said Tuesday that the bishops have changed their tone. Sounds to me like the message as well regarding gays and divorcees.
We don't go around saying you're living in sin, or you're intrinsically disordered, or you're a terrible person, or we don't use words of condemnation. We recognize the reality that people are living in, and we find ways of saying you can be better.
The synod, this big meeting, is not over. Amendments are already being offered today that may reel back some of the quite striking language in the documents that came out Monday. But there's a big message on the table. Catholics all around the world are looking at it, including here in the United States. Josh McElwee, please stand by there in Rome with me to look at what's coming out of the Vatican this week. From Washington, Christopher Hale joins us. He's senior fellow at Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, co-founder of the online journal Millennial. Christopher Hale, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
With us from New York, Stefano Gennarini. He is director of the Center for Legal Studies at the Catholic Family and Human Rights Institute. Stefano Gennarini, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
And with me in the studio, Marianne Duddy Burke. She is executive director of Dignity USA. It's a national LGBT Catholic organization, lesbian, two adopted daughters with her wife with us here today. Marianne, thank you so much for joining us.
So good to be with you. Thank you.
So let's dive in. Christopher, if I may come first to you, I see you with your journal Millennial. I guess that suggests you're thinking about younger Catholics. I have a sense of you as perhaps a more liberal Catholic. What have you heard? What have you read coming out of the Synod this week, Christopher?
Well, more than liberal, I think anything to describe me as a millennial Catholic. I'm 25 years old. I'm practicing. I attend Mass every Sunday, so mm-hmm. I'm still within the Church. But I think what we're really seeing here is Pope Francis is responding to the Church today. He's reading the signs of the times, that language of intrinsically disorder, which the Vatican had been using since 1975, is no longer a way forward to describe LGBT Catholics. This is an incredible document, even though it is only a temporary document, only partial, just to say that the LGBT community has gifts that they can offer the Christian community, and no condemnation, no strong language of living in sin or intrinsically disordered. This is a way to go forward. Leading with this language, leading with inclusivity, is a way to recreate and build the faith of the Catholic Church to the millennial generation. I think it's a great step forward, and we're really excited about it.
Marianne Duddy Burke, just on this front, and there's much more in this document, even beyond these categories we've talked about, they're talking about birth rates and family, the health of family life more broadly, but these have got a lot of attention, and especially on gay Catholics. You represent the LGBT community. What do you see in this document?
I think it's very significant to note the change in tone here, as Christopher just mentioned. I mean, we've heard language here that starts from a very positive and welcoming and affirming place. It's sort of like, you know, the bishops and the church leadership is finally catching up with the people of the church who have been very supportive of their LGBT sisters, brothers, mothers, fathers, cousins for decades. So it's really nice to have that turn. I think what LGBT Catholics are waiting for is to see how is this translated in final documents, in the dialogue that happens leading up to the next synod, in what comes out of that, and most importantly, in how it's implemented at the local level where we live, here in the U.S. and in countries all across the globe.
Stefano Generini, what do you see in the big document that came out on Monday, looking at so many fronts of family life, including these kind of hot-button issues? What's the movement that you see here, Stefano?
Tom, I think... I don't think so. It's so much a change in tone as much as the church trying to express its openness that has always been there in a new way that speaks to people of all ages in our present age. You know, the church has always taught that individuals who identify as gay have the same inherent dignity as every other person and should be cared for by the church with love and compassion. This has always been the case, and I don't think it's so much an issue of abandoning the term objectively disordered to describe, you know, the
intrinsically
inclination towards same-sex attraction. I think, you know, that's a really technical term that gets twisted into something as if it's a term of condemnation, but the term objectively disordered is a term in moral theology in the Catholic Church that is also describes, for example, individuals who have divorced and remarried, for example. They live in an objectively disordered situation, but it could also be used to describe someone who is obese and overeats, for example. So that's what it means by objectively disordered. It's not so much a term of condemnation, but simply describing that human beings are not fulfilling their full potential.
Stefano, I see your group as a more conservative-leaning Catholic group. Do you welcome this Monday document? Would you sign off on it, send it straight to the Pope, and make it church policy to address these issues in the language and manner described in this document?
You know, I wouldn't with exactly the language used in the document, because I think it's a little bit confusing. I think, especially with regards to the issue of communion for those Catholics who are divorced and remarried civilly without having their sacramental marriage in the Catholic Church having been declared null. And I think that's the reason for that is mostly it's not only a juridical issue. We're not talking about telling people, hey, you're living in sin, that's bad, so you can't come to communion. You know, that's not what we're saying here. I think the reason for the practice of the church of not allowing persons who have been divorced and remarried outside of the Catholic Church to come to communion is a pastoral issue at root. It really is a pastoral issue. We're talking about here about the whole family. We're not just talking about the individual who divorced being allowed to come to communion. You know, there's no such thing as a good divorce, right? Especially where there are children involved. Children are betrayed and feel betrayed by parents who divorce. That's a fact. And their belief that love exists is seriously challenged when they see that. So what kind of message would the church be giving to these kids if, say, their father remarried and receives communion? You know, they may not want anything to do with the Catholic Church after that. They would see it as the church blessing the decision of their father to betray their mother.
But I suppose one could imagine children feeling the opposite, that they'd want to see their parent embraced by the church, even if they'd gone through some marital change. I mean, I hear you saying it's not a big deal, but at the same time, rather firmly rejecting what I read as a lot of the tone in this document. Josh McElwee, you're listening from Rome. Speaking of the word objectively, do you see a substantial change of tone if it survives this language in the Monday document, Josh? Do we see a significant, even a landmark change in tone?
Regarding the divorced and remarried or in general?
On all fronts.
Well, I do see a significant change in tone, and it has to do a little bit about how they asked, how this document asks the questions, or how it confronts the issue. And the first one of the first things the document says is that it proposes that church doctrine needs to be applied. It needs to be applied alongside mercy, and that seems to be coming out as a big idea or a big notion of this synod. The idea of we've done the church doctrine side, we've done what the law looks like, we've done what it looks like if you're not quite adhering to something, but then also at the same time applying mercy, understanding that every person comes from a different struggle and a different point of life and needs mercy. Now the question about the divorced and remarried, one thing that has come up by several cardinals is the idea that we currently say that a person who is divorced and remarried cannot take physical communion, can't go to the communion at the Mass, but they're part of a spiritual communion. They can still come to church. They can still participate in the prayers. And several cardinals have said that that seems unfair. Why can't they take that physical communion? And if we're not allowing them to, what does that say about how the church is structured? If they can only take the spiritual communion but can't be with the church fully? And so but it's a conversation that's still ongoing, and it's easy to see where the fault lines are forming and unsure where that's going to end up.
Marianne, there are many ways of interpreting this, I suppose, but as you read it, do you see, I mean, some people are describing this as a bombshell document, an earthquake document. They are seeing a very large change in attitude, if not doctrine, in this document. How do you see it, Marianne?
For me, one of the huge lines in this preliminary document was the quote that it is necessary to accept people in their concrete being, and relating that to how Jesus moved through the world and sort of touched people from all walks of life and, you know, was never condemning. I think that the church is grappling with a huge pastoral crisis. I mean, here in the U.S., we know that a third of all adults who were raised Catholic are no longer affiliated with the church. You know, there are similar statistics in other countries around the world. And I think that, you know, what Josh just said, that there really is this recognition that starting from doctrine and saying you don't measure up is pastorally harmful to people and has led for folks to feel second class in the church or to feel unheard, and has led to this mass exodus, which is damaging in lots of ways to individuals, to families, and to the church. And I think that the church leadership is finally wrestling with that reality in a very structural way and has done some listening to the people of the church. You know, tens of thousands of people all around the world filled out questionnaires or sent letters to their bishops and leaders telling them about their struggles and what they hope to get the church. When is that met? When is that not? To see us as the people of the church having some input into this discussion, if not policy change yet, marks an important shift.
We're looking at the Catholic Church's new working document on gays, the divorced, those living outside marriage. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Christopher Hale, this key line that Marianne quotes about the church accepting people in their concrete being. How do you interpret that, Christopher?
I think it's definitely part of the Franciscan epistemology. That's a big word, but that really means his theory of knowledge. Francis says very clearly, realities are more important than ideas. So Pope Francis believes that we have to start from the reality of people's lives, of people's situations, and go from there. And the question that I think is really at the forefront of his mind is, how do we minister to people that, not even on the margins, he would argue, that are fully excluded from society and also from the church? How do we minister to them? And I think one of the things that's really intriguing is I think the Holy Father has been revealing his cards throughout this whole process. In early September, he said in a homily, the church changes. The church asks us to change. He said, sometimes the church is required to get rid of old structures that no longer are relevant to today's way of living. So I think he's asking for the men that are participating in the synod to be open to the Holy Spirit, open to a new way forward. On the question of communion, he said that the Eucharist is not a prize for the perfect, but a medicine for all. We don't view the Eucharist as some kind of attainment of a goal. It's really something that can heal everyone. It can heal wounds. It can warm hearts. So I think he's really trying to ask, how can we go beyond the old ways and be faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ and the minister to all people, especially those who are most excluded from our fraternal communion?
I want to turn to our listeners, many calling. Omaha, Nebraska, Joe is calling. Hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Everyone else?
Hi.
I'm a non-Catholic, and I'm actually excited about this. My wife is Catholic, and because I was married before her and married in the church but not the Catholic Church, because she married me and my previous marriage was never annulled, she cannot take communion. She's Catholic. We've been married. We've had kids. The kids are Catholic.
Yeah.
But because of this, because of the fact that I was married previously and she was single previously, she still can't take communion. And we don't go to church a lot. I think that the kids are Catholic. I had to sign a paper that says, yes, we'll bring them up Catholic.
Yes.
But I've done all these things for the church, but in the end, they're the ones that are not letting her.
Is it painful for your wife, Joe, to be cut off from that high church ceremony?
You know, I don't know if painful would be the right word, but deep down, having her been brought up Catholic, there is something about not being able to go through communion and not being part of the family thing that I think does bother her a little bit. Or else, you know, we've talked about it when we just came out the other day, we were talking about this. She said, well, don't get your hopes up because, you know, it takes a long time for the church to change.
Joe, I appreciate your call. Joshua, if this goes through, might this open a way for Joe's wife in Omaha to take communion again, physical communion?
It's really unclear at this point. We know that this is a topic of discussion. Monday's document certainly reflects on it and certainly proposes some ideas. But the amendments given by some bishops today were very clearly that they didn't agree with that. A lot of bishops and cardinals are saying that church's teaching on indissolubility of marriage is a very important teaching to uphold. And so they feel that if they give some breathing room, they don't want to have that breathing room give less credibility to the church's teaching on the indissolubility of marriage.
Josh, will this come down to a vote by the Synod, or how is it ultimately determined what the language will be?
Yeah, there's going to be a vote. There's about 190 bishops attending the Synod from around the world who will have a vote. And what the vote will be, it will be on the final document. So they're submitting these proposals, and then they'll eventually have a vote saying we agree or don't agree on this document. But we're not clear if this document from this synod will be anything more than just kind of a summary leading to the next synod when there might be more concrete votes on certain practices or doctrines.
Joshua McElwee with the National Catholic Reporter. Please stand by. Vatican correspondent there in Rome. Marianne Duddy Burke with Dignity USA with me in the studio. Great to have you. Christopher Hale with Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good in Washington. And Stefano Gennarini with the Center for Legal Studies at the Catholic Family and Human Rights Institute. We're talking about change in the Catholic Church. 800-423-TALK. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from WBUR Boston. Moo, offering business cards with Printfinity, the option for a different image on every card in a pack. Learn more at moo.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art. New exhibition features the expressive possibilities of fiber art from intricate weavings to large hanging sculptures on view now. ICABoston.org.